Is ordinance 2302, which is kind of part and parcel of the change of zone number 1995, Janus CRP3 LLC. My understanding that the applicant wishes to consolidate presentations for this. Is that right, Mr. Hunt?
That is correct, Mr. Reed.
All right, sir. Well, we will gladly allow you to do that, but for anyone who is interested, even though they are consolidated, the motions will be voted on separately at the appropriate time.
I think you're clear of the room, Mr. Hunt. Nobody here.
Mr. Chairman, I'll introduce both. Ordinance 2302 is an ordinance to amend the future land use map of a comprehensive plan in relation to tax parcel on its District 334, Map 5, parcels 153.00 and 153.02. The property is lying on the west side of Janus Road, approximately 0.1 mile west of Nassau Commons Boulevard. The 911 address is 32172 Janus Road, Lewis, and the tax parcel ID is District 334, Map 5, parcels 153 and 153.02. Submitted into the record for the ordinance, Mr. Chairman, we have a copy of the boundary plan submitted by the applicant, a copy of a legal description for the property, a letter received on behalf of the property owner. I would note there are no PLUS comments for this. This will have to go through the PLUS process under the new process agreed with PLUS after it's been through Planning and Zoning Commission and County Council. We have received no letters of comment. To summarize the change, it's a change from the commercial designation to the coastal area designation. And then application CZ 1995 is an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district and a C1 general commercial district to an MRRPC medium density residential planned community district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, containing 61.39 acres more or less. The property is lying on the west side of Janus Road, approximately 0.1 mile west of Nassau Commons Boulevard. The 911 address is 32172 Janus Road, Lewis. And the tax parcel ID is District 334, Map 5, parcel 153.02. And submitted into the record for the change of zone, we have a copy of the staff analysis, a copy of the DLDOT service level evaluation response, we have a copy of the PLUS response, this one did go through PLUS, and we have a copy of the preliminary subdivision plat. We also have a copy of the applicant's exhibit booklet, including the Chapter 99-9C response. We have a copy of the applicant's environmental assessment and public facility evaluation report. We have a copy of a jurisdictional determination letter submitted on behalf of the applicant, along with a groundwater recharge report from the applicant. We also have draft deed restrictions submitted by the applicant, and I would note we've received zero comments. Thank you.
And the chair recognizes Mr. Hutt. We recognize Mr. Ring, too.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wheatley. Good evening, members of the Planning Commission, Council, and staff. For the record, my name is David Hutt. I'm a local attorney here in Georgetown with the law firm of Morris James. This evening, I am representing Janus Residential LLC and Janus CRP 3 LLC. Respectively, they are the owner and developer of the property as well as the applicant. With me this evening, as he already made an appearance, is Ring Lardner, the project engineer with Davis Bowen and Friedel, and the representative from the owner and applicant and developer is John Hoffman, and he's sitting right behind where I was sitting. First, thank you for agreeing to consolidate these matters, although you did start earlier, so I thought maybe you'd want to hear them separately,
No.
But apparently that's not the case.
I would ask you to observe the room.
Noted. I think your counsel also noted that as well. So real quickly, before I describe the site, and Mr. Lardner speaks a little bit, I did want to give a very, very brief history of how we got here. In May of 2021, a future land use map amendment request was filed. It was done before you had a letter, or before you had a form, rather, for that. It was done by just a letter to Mr. Whitehouse. In June of that year, the future land use map amendment request went to the Office of State Planning Coordination, and that information is, the written comments are in your booklet. What followed after that was a set of applications. There was actually three zoning applications in addition to that future land use map amendment. There was a change of zone application seeking to change designation of a portion of the property from AR to MR, a separate change of zone application seeking to change the C1 portion to MR, and then a conditional use application on top of that for townhomes. After that process, filing those applications, there was a minor subdivision occurred, that's also in your project book, and the storage facility, which is located in the corner of the property, right where the cursor is, and then it was known as AAA storage, was subdivided off of the property through the minor subdivision process, and then through some discussions with staff and some of the staff review, it was determined that this could be simplified down into one application in addition to the future land use map request, and that application being the one that's in front of you tonight, which is the application seeking to change the combination of AR1 C1 lands to an MRRPC district. So rather than there being four applications tonight, there's only two, and of course they've been consolidated. When that change in the applications happened, the name also changed. It was originally known as Ritter Farm. And of course, as you can see at the bottom of the screens around the room, it is now known as Vintners Reserve. And that is, of course, a name which reflects the site's proximity to the Nassau Valley vineyards. Tonight's application, the ones that are in front of you, are not just about obviously the name that identifies the use of one of the adjacent properties. But more importantly, the applications seek to modify the future land use map as well as the zoning map with what we hope you're convinced when we get done talking is a better land use as far as the future land use map, as well as a superior design than what is presently possible for this property. We'll touch on this theme throughout the presentation this evening, but that's the underlying goal of the application. As is typical, I'm going to introduce the application here, and then Mr. Lardner is going to walk through some of the site design and site plan details and technical aspects, and after he's done, I'll talk about the project's compliance with the zoning code and the future land use map amendment to the comprehensive plan. Given the room that I'm standing in, I will just note that the property needs no introduction. You're all familiar with this property where it's located, immediately west of the Nassau overpass. I did want to note, just very quickly, I won't highlight all the surrounding communities and uses. Immediately to the north and west of the property is the Whispering Pines manufactured home community. To the south or southeast of the property, you have the vineyards at Nassau Valley. You have the actual vineyards or winery themselves, and then as you come back around, you of course have the fire department that is located adjacent to this. And I know you want me to be brief, but this is a good historical note. With the Whispering Pines manufactured home community was approved in 1971 as conditional use number 25.
I was not here for that.
The conditional use you just heard was conditional use 2,375, so your 2,350 conditional uses from when Whispering Pines manufactured home community was approved. When you look at this site on the state strategies map, which is on the screens around the room, you can see whatever color that happens to be, that's not red or orange, it's sort of in between those two. That is all level two areas. The red is, of course, level one areas on the state strategies map. And you can see that almost the entirety of the property is shown as being within level two. A portion of the property where the storage facility is shown as being in level one. And then there's an interesting portion of level one at that corner of the property. Similarly, the 2045 future land use map that's found in the comprehensive plan, you can see that this entire area is shown as either yellow or red, which, as you know, means the yellow is the coastal area and the red is the commercial area. Again, this entire property is shown as being within the red or commercial area, except for a little dot of coastal area which appears within the property itself. In order to facilitate this project this evening and have one consistent designation on the future land use map amendment, There was an application that I referenced a moment ago seeking to change that designation so that the entirety of the property would be yellow in color or the coastal area. The reason for that amendment request is because of Table 4.5-2 that's found in the comprehensive plan, as you know, that identifies applicable zoning districts for each of the future land use map categories. And when you look at the coastal area, or let's start with the commercial area, when you look at the commercial area, the only zoning classifications that are applicable in that are, of course, all of your business districts and all of your commercial districts, so the B zoning classifications and the C zoning classifications, and then AR1. If you want to do something other than a business or commercial on this property, that means that you would have to amend the future land use map, because the coastal area includes all of those business and commercial zoning districts, as well as MR, GR, and the HR zoning districts. And so that is the basis for the request. As I mentioned a few moments ago, when considering the land use for this area, having a little more than 60 acres of additional business or commercial at that location on Janus Road did not match the character of the area, which is why the future land use map amendment request was followed. At one time, as the commission is aware, the commercial zoning districts did allow for residential use, which is why this area has residential that's within much of the area that you see that's shown as commercial. As you know, C1 and CR1 permitted residential uses, and when those were closed districts and then the new business and commercial districts were enacted by the county, there is no longer an opportunity for residential use within commercial or business districts, except for the limited residential that's in the C4 district. The zoning map is similar. You can see that the red or the C1 areas follow what was shown on the 2045 future land use map. So all of the areas, of course, this is Route 1 that runs from the central middle portion to the right-hand side. And you can see on both sides of Route 1 is C1. The yellow is MR, which is, of course, the zoning designation that's being sought this evening for this property. And as you know, the unshaded areas are AR1, and there's various other mixture of zoning classifications. You can see B2 is here. There's C2 and other business and commercial zoning districts in this area. Tonight's request, as was mentioned and introduced by Mr. Whitehouse, seeks to amend the future land use map for this property so that it is all within the coastal area, and then also to change the zoning app, the zoning designation for this property, which consists of 61.7 acres, from a split C1 AR1 to MR with an RPC overlay district, seeking 316 townhomes. Very quickly, the C1 portion is 4.2 acres. You can see it's shown in red, the front of the site, and then the balance of the site, 57.5 acres, is zoned AR1. With that review of the history, location, and surrounding zoning and future land use designations, I'm going to ask Mr. Lardner if he would go over the site plan design and technical features, and when he's done, I'll review the plan's compliance with the comprehensive plan and zoning code.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, Commission, staff. For the record, Ring Lardner with Davis, Bone and Friedel, and wish you all a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
So as Mr. Hutter mentioned, this project is located along Janus Road, which is classified as a local road per the DLDOT functional classification map. And it is a road actually parallel with Route 1 and shares the right-of-way with Route 1, which is kind of interesting construct, but they did classify Janus Road as a local road for that project, for the roadway classification. Before diving into the aspects of site, just want to begin with a couple review of the maps that Mr. Hutt has not gone over yet. The second map in the booklet is the one on the screen. That is the floodplain map. That map shows that the site is not located within the 100-year floodplain. The eighth map in your book is the environmental map. And as you can see on this screen, there are four areas in green depicted on the screen that, per public information, shows that those areas are actually wetlands. We did hire Environmental Resources Incorporated, Mr. Ed Lanay, whom you're all familiar with, did perform a wetland delineation, submitted the delineation report to the Corps of Engineers, and in Exhibit J contains the approved jurisdiction where the Army Corps of Engineers determined that there are no waters of the United States and no wetlands on the parcel, and that based on historical photographs, this is actually the location of the borrow pit that was used that created Route 1. And it's for those reasons why that area is not jurisdictional. The ninth map of the booklet is the source water protection map that typically depicts wellhead protection areas, which is a couple way off the site, and then excellent recharge areas. You'll notice that there's a small excellent recharge area in the southwest corner of the site. That area is 1.324 acres of land, or less than 2.2% of the total site. There are no special extra requirements from Chapter 89 for this project because the impervious area within that 1.3 acres will be less than 0.5%, which is well below the 35% threshold that requires additional mitigation within the wellhead protection area or the recharge area. The last map is the soils map, and the soils on the site are conducive for development of the property. As I mentioned, the site is on Janus Road, and the aerial on the screen right now depicts the site rendering with Del Dots overlay. This comes from the Minas Conaway Great Separate Interchange project. That project will improve Janus Road to those local road standards. 11-foot travel lanes, 5-foot shoulders with a 5-foot sidewalk that will ultimately connect to the Trailhead parking lot and the Lewis to Georgetown trail. So this site will have connectivity to that, not only through the construction of our project, but through the improvements of the Great Separated Interchange. Speaking of Del Dot, this project is located with the Hinlopen TID. We have spoken with Ms. Sarah Coakley of the TID. She has confirmed that we're eligible to be within the TID. One interesting note is Del Dot, for whatever reason, as part of the TID, had only assigned 81 single-family homes as the chip generation for this site. Exactly. But we were able to demonstrate that our site traffic projection is in compliance with the generation from the 81 homes plus the allowable percentage, and therefore we are eligible to stay within the TID. Diving into the quick site specifics, residents will enter into the site via a 50-foot access easement that will be jointly shared with the storage facility and come into the site. We believe the entrance will consist of a left turn lane, right turn lane that will still be determined through the design process. The road, internal roads, will be designed to exceed Sussex County standards, and that the pavement width for the main roads will be 32 feet in width, which exceeds the code requirement of 24 feet. And that is the main road A, this road here, and then this road here. The little loop roads that has some off-street parking, they are 24 feet in width, so it's really the main road coming in and throughout the site is what meets the 32-foot road requirements. It's not every road in this community. Each lot will have a minimum of 2 parking spaces. We have provided additional overflow parking throughout the site. There's some overflow parking along here, overflow parking in this area, overflow parking down here, overflow parking in this area, overflow parking here, in this area, in this area. The overflow total parking includes 147 parking spaces, will be the minimum that we provide for this project.
That's above and beyond the 2 that you've already provided?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
And the 2 that you provide, how many units?
316.
So you're currently providing 632 or something?
Yes. Glad we started these at 3 o'clock, by the way. If not, we'd be here at 9 o'clock doing that kind of math.
I'm real good at second grade math.
As I mentioned, the excellent recharge area is in this back corner. There's a small portion here. That's just an area to give you an idea of the area that was going to be impacted on the site. The proposed project includes a 20-foot forested buffer along the northern edge, eastern edge, southern edge of the site, all the way down through here. We did not provide a buffer, I guess you could say, formally seeking a waiver from the rear of the fire station and along the portion of the storage area for this road. That's just given to the tight access for the road to fit in there. There is, with this open area, plenty of screening for the firehouse, and hence the waiver for not providing the buffer in those three locations. The project also includes an interconnection. It'll be a forested road interconnection located at this location. We have confirmed that with the Vineyards project. Since we are the engineer for the Vineyards, we were able to obviously compare the plans. That is where the interconnection is shown on the Vineyards plan. We proposed a forested road that allows the emergency connection together. Given the location of this connection, it's not a real viable access for vehicles to make that connection. But we have provided that pedestrian connection that'll be available for both projects to transit across each other. That allow pedestrian movement to those that wanted to visit the winery, or those that wanted to take a trail up to the Junction Bridge or to the Lewis Georgetown Trail to use that access. Activities will include, at a minimum, a dog park.
So that road would lead up also to Redner's, the new Redner's, right?
No.
So they still have
to get the Redner's, you'd have to go all the way around through.
Out and around, down through, up.
You wouldn't have to go on Route 1, though. You'd have to get on Janus, right?
Janus Road to Nassau Commons.
To Nassau Commons.
Yes, sir. Okay. And Nassau Commons is a zone project that's forthcoming sometime in the future. As I was saying, the amenities will include a minimum a dog park, I call the unorganized play area that could be used at any type of venue throughout the year by anybody. One pocket park with playground equipment appropriate for ages 3 through 10. Those locations will be shown on the final site plan as final engineering is completed. Open space K is this open space right here in the middle of the site, is where the central amenities will be provided. That will also include, at a minimum, 42 parking spaces, a 3,500 square foot pool house, a 2,000 square foot pool, that's water surface area, and a pickleball court. The project overall includes approximately 29 acres of open space, with the final acres to be determined during design and agency approval, which is equivalent to approximately 47% of the project area. Stormwater management will be designed to meet or exceed Denrec standards, and we are intended to do constructive wetlands to meet that requirement, utilizing the area that was created for the borrow pit. As noted at the outset of the hearing, this project is proposed as a residential plan community, and as such, we are requesting two deviations from the standards of the code. The first deviation is we are requesting the average lot area be reduced from 3,630 square feet per lot to 3,000 square feet, and we are also requesting the side yards be reduced from 20 feet to 10 feet. On that, the project complies with the code as presented in front of you this evening. As noted, the project was reviewed by PLUS. That response can be found in Exhibit L. This plan is slightly different than what was reviewed back then, but PLUS did provide another letter stating a second review was not required. It was not a substantial change enough to require a second review. All those correspondences in Exhibit L. We prepared a public facilities investment environmental assessment report that can be found in Exhibit H. And with the mitigation measures implemented, we are consistent with the comprehensive plan. TAC reviewed the project. Their response is in Exhibit I to the TAC comments. Project will be served by county sewer, Tidewater Utilities for water, Delmarva Power for electric, Chesapeake Utilities for gas, and Comcast and Verizon can fight over phone and cable. All of them have supplied willing and able letters, and they can be found in Exhibit P. While technically a site plan through the RPC process, we did formally prepare a response to Chapter 99 that can be found in Exhibit G. And in summary, that the project is integrated into existing terrain and surrounding landscape, does not contain wetlands or floodplains, provides buffers to screen objectionable features, prevents pollution of surface and groundwater, provides for safe vehicle and pedestrian movements, mitigates the effect on area roadways and public transportation, and is compatible with other land uses. Thank you.
In describing the project's compliance with land planning documents that are applicable to it, wanted to start with the state strategies. The state describes level two areas as in being like investment level one areas, state investments and policies should support and encourage a wide range of uses and densities. It goes on to state, and that's significant to tonight's application, that investments should encourage departure from the typical single-family dwelling developments and promote a broader mix of housing types and commercial sites, encouraging compact mixed-use development where applicable. As you can see, the state in level two, where it anticipates growth in the near-term future, is encouraging a departure from typical single-family homes. It's to offer a wider variety of housing types, which is certainly accomplished by this application. Similarly, Chapter 8 of the Comprehensive Plan echoes those concerns. And I know you've heard me discuss this before, and it's many of you participated firsthand in the Comprehensive Plan update in 2018. But there's a significant gap in the number of building permits that are issued for multifamily residents versus single-family residents. In the 2018 Comprehensive Plan, it charted 2016, 17, and 18. And in 2016, 91%, if I round down, it's just 90%. So 90% of all the building permits that were issued for residential uses were for single-family homes, and 10% were for multifamily homes. It got worse in 2017 and 18. In 2017, only 5% of the building permits that were issued were for multifamily homes. And it went up by 1% in 2018. And of course, that data hasn't all been updated in the Comprehensive Plan, because the document will be updated in a few years. But what that led Chapter 8 to conclude was a consideration for council was to consider establishing whether housing types, specifically multifamily developments, could become part of a permitted use in certain zoning classifications. And while that hasn't happened, so I don't have the answer to that question here this evening, this application does present an answer to that problem and offers yet another variety of housing types in this area. So the question then that the commission would have in front of it is the coastal area and then this area appropriate for multifamily dwellings, specifically townhomes? And as you know, the coastal area is described as being some of the county's most desirable areas and locations that can accommodate development, provided special environmental concerns are addressed. And you heard in Mr. Lardner's comments that there are no wetlands on this property, which are the typical environmental concern in the coastal area, and that the only other environmental concern per se what is the excellent recharge area in the southwest corner of the site, and this will readily comply with that, as it's 34.5% away from the 35% threshold of when additional requirements are required. In the permitted uses for the coastal area, again, it talks about a range of housing types being permitted, including single-family homes, townhomes, and multifamily units. With respect to densities, the coastal area states as follows: medium and higher densities, in parentheses 4 to 12 units per acre, can be appropriate in certain locations. Medium and higher density could be supported in areas where there is central water and sewer, near sufficient commercial uses and employment centers, where it is in keeping with the character of the area, where it is along a main road or at or near a major intersection, where there is adequate level of service, or where other considerations exist that are relevant to the requested project and density. Very quickly, I wanted to address the density of the project. And it's hard to see on the screens around the room, but the density, there is 316 townhomes that are requested, as you heard. That leads to a density of 5.12 units per acre. And the density of the most immediate neighbors to this site are shown on here. And you can see that the Whispering Pines Manufactured Home Community, which is the northern and western neighbor, has a density of 6.1 units per acre. The Vineyards at Nassau Valley, our neighbor to the south and east, has a density of 11.94 units per acre. The next closest residential neighbor on this side of Route, on the west side of Route 1, is Sandbar Village, which is 12 units per acre. And then our nearest residential neighbor, if you go across the street, is the Lewis Crest townhomes, and they are at a density of 10 units per acre. More importantly, probably than even just comparing the density of this project to those, is you heard the list of factors of when medium and higher densities could be considered, and this application checks every one of those boxes. There's central water available through Tidewater Utilities, central sewer through the county, and in fact, the letter from the Sussex County Engineering Department confirmed that this is in a tier one area of the county's unified sewer district. Certainly, there are many commercial uses and employment centers, whether you head north on Route 1, south on Route 1, or go to Route 9 and head east or west in any of those directions. It is certainly situated along a main road. DelDOT would classify Route 1 as an other principal arterial, and the county's code classifies Route 1 as one of the seven major arterial roadways within Sussex County. And as Mr. Lardner indicated during his presentation, immediately to the north of this project, it's in the DelDOT's immediate or near very near future plans to put in a grade separated interchange at the intersection of Route 1 and Minos Conaway Road, at which point Janus Road, and they may not like my reference to this, but Janus Road becomes a sort of a service road at that point, which runs parallel to Route 1 on the western side. The next question is adequate level of service. And again, that is the purpose of the improvements, the Minos Conaway grade separated interchange, and also the improvements that are set forth in the Henlopen Transportation Improvement District, which of course this project will contribute to. The last characteristics was, is it in keeping with the character of the area? And this relates directly back to my initial comment about what's appropriate for this 60 acres, as the lands around it have already been developed, and would it be appropriate for it to be more than 60 acres of commercial or 60 acres of business? And that is, again, the applications that we filed say we don't think that that's the appropriate location for those things. As this area is filled in, it would be more appropriate for it to be a multi-family project similar to Sandbar Village, similar to the Vineyards, similar to Lewis Crest across the street, just at a lower density than all of those projects. As you know, the MR zoning district is the county's medium density zoning district, and the zoning code's purpose of the MR district describes it as areas which are expected to become generally urban in character, but where sanitary sewers and public water supplies may or may not be available at the time of construction. Certainly those are already available here, and I think most people would describe this area, as the zoning code did for that purpose, as being urban in nature or character. Multifamily dwellings within the MR zoning district happen in one of two ways, essentially. It's either a conditional use in an MR zoning district, or as the application is tonight, you can seek an RPC, which is, as you know, is an overlay zoning district over top of the underlying MR zoning classification. The purpose of an RPC, as set forth in the code, is to encourage large-scale developments as a means of creating a superior living environment through unified developments, and to provide for the application of design ingenuity while protecting existing and future developments and achieving the goals of the comprehensive plan. The RPC tool was chosen for this project because it allowed the neighborhood to offer that several sizes of townhomes. If you looked at the data column, you could see there are several different sizes of townhomes that would be offered, focused on that central amenity, which would be here in open space K, and also allowed for a number of open space areas, as you can see on the screens, to be located throughout the various parts of the community, with those open space areas totaling a little more than 45% of the entirety of the site. When that was done, what this allowed the design to do, or the designers were able to reduce the average lot size, as you heard that request, as shown. And this, of course, allowed for greater amounts of open space. This is likely the location of the unorganized play area that Mr. Lardner referred to, where kids can gather and play a game of football or whatever field sport it is that they would like to do. Again, I know that the commission is familiar with the concept of reducing lot size to allow better use of open space throughout a community. And that's what, this was carefully thought through in relation to the residential uses that surround this property and the fact that there are, of course, commercial or institutional uses like the fire station that exist at the front of this property, between this property and Route 1. By arranging the site in this fashion and using the RPC tool and providing the screening that you see, it helps to protect the existing residents, whether you're in the Whispering Pines manufactured home community or those moving into the vineyards, and as well as the businesses that exist along Route 1. All of those same characteristics, which I'm not going to review for the sake of brevity this evening, also make that all those same characteristics that apply to the MR district, of course, make this appropriate for the coastal area of the future land use map designation. Specifically, if you look at the list of considerations for growth areas in Section 4.4.2.1, again, this project meets those on all fours, just as it did for the medium and higher densities. Chapter 4, of course, describes the commercial growth areas. And I'm not going to, I was going to read the whole section, but basically what is slated for this site, if you look at the future land use map within the comprehensive plan, is for large-scale retail. That's what it says the commercial areas are oriented to. And of course, what is proposed is a far less intense use than that. It makes far more sense given the existing residential uses that surround this property. I guess in conclusion, Chapter 4 and Chapter 8 of the county's comprehensive plan indicate that the proposed coastal area allowing residential uses is an appropriate area in the county for this and for the MR zoning classification. And of course, as you, as I read earlier, level two areas are areas where the state expects and encourages growth and specifically encourages greater housing options to be available. And I did want to read a statement from the PLUS review for the future land use map amendment. On the first page of that review from the Office of State Planning Coordination, it states, "This parcel is surrounded by coastal area and is currently slated for a higher use, being commercial. It is also within levels one and two, according to the strategies for state policies and spending. The state has no objections to the amendment as written," that being the amendment to the coastal area. Then in reviewing the actual project itself, the state again noted that it was located in level two and states that investment level two reflects areas where growth is anticipated by local county and state plans in the near-term future. State investments will support growth in these areas. And then there was one proviso, and that proviso was that Sussex County makes the proposed amendment to the future land use map. Otherwise, it's not appropriate. There'd be conflict between the comprehensive plan and the zoning. In conclusion, the applicant would request that the change, a recommendation of approval for the amendment to the future land use map, as well as changing the property's designation on the zoning map to MRRPC for 316 townhomes. I have a set of findings and proposed conditions for both of those applications, which I will hand to Mr. Whitehouse. I'm going to ask if I'm going to filibuster for a moment and see if we can get the proposed conditions for the change of zone application to each person, because I did want to review a couple of those as they are a little unique to this project. I'm doing a bad job of filibustering because I think that would involve talking and I was just standing there.
We were talking about singing earlier. You got any?
No. So Mr. Lowry, I think they're all the way over to you. So on the proposed findings and conditions for change of zone 1995, the proposed conditions begin on page 5. And in proposed condition B is where the bulk area standards would be set for this RPC. And I wanted to highlight a couple of those. The first two I wanted to highlight are 1 and 3. And what the proposed condition is that the front yard be a minimum of 20 feet, and it says the rear yard a minimum of 10 feet. If you look at the data column on the site plan that is within the materials that were presented, you would see that the front yard said 25 and the rear yard said 15. And the difference between those isn't because Mr. Lardner and I are arguing with each other about this. The difference is that the reason I say a minimum of 20 feet and a minimum of 10 feet is because it would be desirable to have the townhomes not all be at the exact same have the exact same front yard setback. And so the key here is number four, which says the combined front and rear yard has to be 40 feet, which matches the code. And so some of those townhomes might be set at 20 feet, some at 25. And so Mr. Lardner's data column just said 25, but the condition that we would be seeking would be a minimum of 20 feet, and then in the front, and a minimum of 10 in the back. But irrespective of whether they're 20 or 25 in the front, then the rear would, of course, have to compensate and then make up the 40-foot difference within that setback. The two other ones that I wanted to highlight in B are 5, which says side yard 10 feet, and 10, which says average lot area 3,000 square feet. And you heard from Mr. Lardner about that request. But again, these are the lot sizes and adjustments that allow for that average lot size to be reduced and allows for the site plan that you see on the screens around the room. I would note with respect to number 10, the average lot area, that while that's at 3,000 square feet, the minimum size of a lot, actually what that we're proposing, exceeds the minimum that's allowed in the code. The minimum that the code would say is that every lot has to have it be at least 1,600 square feet, and we're proposing that no lot be less than 2,000 square feet. So while the average goes down, the smallest lot actually goes up under these proposed conditions. The other two conditions that I wanted to highlight are J, condition J, which is at the bottom of page 5, and I just wanted to note that it identifies the areas that Mr. Lardner pointed out where there is not a perimeter buffer. And of course, that is these areas along Road A, the entrance road, and then behind the fire department. The final one that I wanted to, or condition, proposed condition I wanted to address was condition L. And condition L describes the recreational amenities and also describes, as is typical for the Planning Commission, there was an application tonight about this, but when those items would have to be completed. And this is a new year, so there's a slightly new approach to try and help some of these projects avoid some of the pitfalls of sizing amenities and based on original plans, and then of course those plans change as the years go by. So rather than show you, as you saw, you didn't see the design of a pool, you didn't see, you know, an L-shaped pool or a circular pool or something like that. So what the conditions propose is a minimum square feet of water surface for a pool area, something that Mr. Whitehouse and his staff will be able to objectively determine in the future, that does this pool meet 2,000 square feet of surface area. The same approach was taken with the pool or bathhouse. It provides a minimum square footage of that. And so whatever the design of that building takes on in the future, nobody can say, well, we saw a plan in January 23 and thought that the building was going to look like X or Y. It's a minimum 3,500 square foot bathhouse. Again, I wanted to highlight that because that is different than a lot of the other types of conditions that we've seen in that. And hopefully that approach, again, avoids some of the pitfalls that we've seen. That concludes our presentation. Myself and the rest of the team that's here with me are happy to answer any questions that the commissioner or staff may have.
All right, sir, we thank you. We'll see if there's anyone on the commission that has any questions for you. And we'll start with Ms. Hoey Stevens.
I'm just curious what the average, you know, you've got a little open space A's and open space B. How, what's, you know, like besides the place where you're going to put your amenities, how about, how big are some of these open spaces?
It's actually on the plan. I don't, did you have that on?
I was going to do the same thing you were.
Okay.
In exhibit,
oh, like on sheet 10.
I think it's exhibit F, towards the very end. I could have done a better job. But at the title sheet of the most recent preliminary plan, list the open space areas and the data column. And okay. So they range, the smallest is 0.15 acres, or 0.05 acres. So they vary in size from like 0.05 to just over an acre. So they're varying in size throughout the site.
But each one of the designated ones with a letter, there is a corresponding acreage, so you'll be able to compare. You can compare what the relative sizes okay. of each of those are.
My computer's been fighting me for the last few days. Thank you.
That's. I don't have any other questions.
Okay. I think that by increasing the density like that, you're taking 400 or 500 homes from somewhere between Gravel Hill and Georgetown off of Route 9. So I like it.
I don't think that's true at all.
I like it because they're coming. People are coming either way.
They're going to be here and they're going to be there
At least those 400 or 500. 400 or 500 of those people won't be because we've made them some more room up there to live.
These are going to be second homes.
But they're going to be down here in the summer.
Okay.
Second homes across from a vineyard.
Yep.
I just one question. Have any idea when DLDOT may be doing the road improvements on Janus?
Mr. Lardner has been talking with DLDOT, so.
I figured he probably had.
I believe it's FY24, which means June of 23 is when it could earliest start according to the capital transportation program. So it's within the next year, my understanding.
Okay.
Is when that interchange plans will get started.
That's all I have.
No questions for me. Just to correct my earlier statement, Mr. Chairman, when I said that this would have to go back through PLUS under their new process, because the ordinance and the change of zone have both been commented by PLUS, and we have written comments, this is probably the last one that doesn't have to go back through PLUS, in my view. Okay. But we can check that.
Councillor? All right, sir. If you'll take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anybody here with an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of Ordinance 23-02 and or change of zone number 1995 Janus CRP 3 LLC? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to either of these applications? Operator, is there anyone standing by who would like to speak in favor of or in opposition to this these applications?
We have Yuli on the line. Yuli, your line is open. Hi, good evening. This is Yuli, 2243 Ridge Circle, Lewis. I appreciate that Suffolk County needs high-density dwelling units, and I'm not against multi-family or anything. My concern here today is the safety. If there is a fire, are there enough parking spaces for residents to park their cars off the road for the fire engines to go by? And I assume that these units will have the sprinkler system because they're multi-units. But I'm concerned when I look at this long road with many houses around, if the cars are parked on the street, I think that will be a problem. And to me, it just looks like a very long one-way in and out. I don't know if there's any possibility of interconnectivity to offer other outlets for them. So that's just my comment tonight. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Operator, is there anyone else standing by who would like to speak?
At this time, there is currently no one on the line.
All right. commissioners, any further questions or comments?
Thank you.
Being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us the rest of the evening, see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning. Okay, that completes our